Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Today on the program, you will hear stories from Anne Ball, Dan Friedel, and John Russell. Jill Robbins will tell us what's trending today, and Anna Mateo will bring us this week's health report. But first, President Donald Trump officially withdrew the United States from the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal on Monday. The move was expected. Even before he announced his candidacy for president 18 months ago, Trump said the trade deal was bad for American workers. The president signed an anti-TPP executive order at the White House, as reporters watched. "We've been talking about this for a long time," Trump said. "A great thing for the American worker, what we just did." During his campaign for the presidency, Trump said some trade deals with other countries cost America jobs. He said they lead employers to move operations outside the United States to save on labor costs. The United States negotiated the TPP during the administration of former President Barack Obama. But the U.S. Congress never approved the trade deal. The agreement would have lowered tariffs on trade involving the U.S. and 11 other countries, including Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, and Japan. The others are Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, and Vietnam. The TPP would have been the biggest trade deal in history, covering nearly 40% of the world economy. China did not take part in the negotiations, but it appears ready to sign its own trade deals with Southeast Asian countries that would have been part of the TPP. Former President Obama said the trade agreement would be good for the United States. Without a deal, he said, China would write the rules for the global economy. Last Friday, Trump was sworn in as president. He was elected last November after defeating former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Both she and Obama are members of the Democratic Party. Trump was the Republican presidential candidate. After being sworn in, Trump said his administration would work to put America first, signaling a move to more isolationist policies. TPP would have cut more than 18,000 tariffs, including taxes on all goods made in the U.S. and almost all American farm products. The deal sought to end child labor abuses and set better conditions for workers on pay, hours of work, and safety and health. At the start of talks with business leaders on Monday, Trump said he would reduce government rules on businesses by 75% or more. And he said the U.S. government would be streamlined. By streamlined, he meant there would be fewer government workers. "The regulations are going to be cut massively and the taxes way down," he said. But he also warned the business leaders not to move operations to other countries. He said businesses would pay a heavy price if they make products in other countries and then try to sell them in the United States. The new president said he also wants to change the terms of the 1994 North American Free Trade Agreement with Mexico and Canada. On Sunday, Trump announced he will discuss NAFTA, immigration, and border security when he meets with Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto at the end of January. The Trump administration said he also plans to meet soon with Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau. I think we're going to have a very good result for Mexico, for the United States, and for everyone involved, Trump said. Last week, Japan's parliament approved the TPP. But Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe said that without the United States, the trade deal would become meaningless. Japanese stock prices fell on Monday. Market watchers said it showed investors' reaction to Trump's America First speech and the U.S. rejection of the TPP. South Korea is not part of the TPP, but has a free trade agreement with the United States. Some American companies noted that South Korea tries to get around the agreement by putting strong non-tariff rules on U.S. imports. On Monday, South Korea's acting president and prime minister, Wang Ko-an, said the South Korean government has been in contact with the Trump administration. He said the government told Trump officials that it has lived up to the trade agreement. Also on Monday, Trump signed executive orders suspending the employment of new federal workers, except for the military. His spokesman said the only exception would be workers in national or public security positions. Another order banned U.S. non-governmental organizations that receive federal money from providing abortions outside the United States. The organizations had received government funding during the Obama presidency.
Thailand is backing Chinese plans to clear parts of the Mekong River to allow large cargo ships to pass through. The plans call for destroying small islands and rocky areas along the Mekong River as part of a 10-year project. The project is intended to boost shipping navigation along a 630-kilometer part of the river from China's Yunnan province to Luang Prabang in Laos. In 2015, an estimated 3,500 commercial ships used the Mekong River to carry goods from China's Yunnan province to Thailand. Most of those ships weighed between 100 and 300 tons. The goal is to make the Mekong River passable for 500-ton cargo ships. The Mekong River in China is known as the Longcheng River. It runs a total length of about 4,300 kilometers through China, Myanmar, Thailand, Laos, Cambodia, and Vietnam. China will reportedly provide $1.5 billion in loans and $10 billion in credit lines to pay for infrastructure and improve transport networks along the Mekong. The first phase involves an initial survey of the area and design plans for the project. environmental and social assessments are also to be conducted. In the second phase, to begin in 2020, navigational improvements will be made over a distance of 259 kilometers. In addition, cargo and passenger ports will be built. The project is expected to be completed by 2025. Thai officials have said the changes are needed to improve the safety of transporting goods and people along the river. They say navigation improvements will reduce the risk of accidents and environmental disasters on the Mekong. Several conservation groups have condemned the plan. They say clearing the islands will have a disastrous impact on aquatic wildlife and communities along the Mekong River. Robert Mather, a conservationist, said, "These are areas very important for fish breeding, fish eating areas, because you have algae growing on the rocks and islets. They are important." The conservationists are especially concerned with a 1.6-kilometer stretch of the river near Thailand's northern province of Chiang Rai. This area includes a collection of small island and rock formations that serve as a border marker between Thailand and Laos at the river's deepest point. Additionally, they say the Mekong River is already facing harm from dam construction projects. These include 3 hydropower projects now being built or under consideration by Laos on the lower Mekong River. Millions of people also depend on the lower Mekong as a major source of food. A coalition of local environmentalists representing 8 Mekong provinces has launched a joint campaign opposing China's development plans. I'm Anne Ball.
A small insect is getting a lot of attention in the United States. The rusty-patched bumblebee is the first of its species to be declared endangered in the lower 48 states, meaning every state except Alaska and Hawaii. The rusty-patched bumblebee is named for a rust-colored line on its back. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service announced this month it was adding the bee to its endangered species list. The insects are on the brink of extinction, according to the service. It said the bees were once found in 28 states, but there now are only small populations remaining in 13 states. The government agency will make a plan to help the dying bees recover. The agency said that such a plan might help other insects, like butterflies. U.S. officials think landowners can take small steps to help the rusty-patched bumblebee. They say landowners can be friendlier toward bees by using native plants in their gardens. The insects directly fertilize many kinds of fruit and vegetable crops, and they fertilize grain crops used to feed cattle and milk cows. It costs billions of dollars to duplicate the job the bees do for free. Landowners are also being urged to cut back on their use of pesticide products. The officials also suggest that gardeners leave their plants alone at the end of the summer instead of cutting them. That way, the bees will have a place to live over the winter. The Fish and Wildlife Service says the rusty-patched bumblebee was added to the endangered species list partly because of habitat loss. Other reasons were disease, pesticides, and climate change. Officials are worried that other bees will suffer too. Another species of bees in Hawaii is also endangered. I'm Dan Friedel.
Bird feathers have long been used in clothing and in bedding. Manufacturers often use feathers because of their light weight and the warmth they provide in a cold room or climate. Now, two students in Britain are studying how to use them in other ways, like keeping homes warm, for example. Chicken is a popular food in many countries, and the number of poultry killed for their meat is rising. Britain alone processes more than 945 million white-feathered chickens every year, creating tons of leftover feathers. Two students from Imperial College London want to turn these feathers into something useful. Elena Diekman and Ryan Robinson are each working toward a Doctor of Philosophy degree, or PhD. They are the founders of a startup company called AeroPowder. The two had an idea to create useful materials from waste. They developed a biodegradable product that could replace man-made insulation. Biodegradable materials are capable of being slowly broken down through natural processes. Builders usually add insulation to homes and offices. The insulation can reduce the energy demands of heating and cooling systems. Diekman and Robinson won several awards for their prototype insulation, including the Mayor of London's Low Carbon Entrepreneur Challenge. The $23,000 they won in the competition helped them start their company, AeroPowder. Elena Diekman explains why feathers are a useful material.
Feathers are a real wonder material. They're designed by nature to protect birds from really harsh environments. So they're super lightweight, they're thermally insulating, they're water repellent, biodegradable, so it's a really great material.
Robinson adds that their goal is to develop ways to use the entire feather, not just parts of it. If successful, AeroPowder may help prevent the waste of this useful natural material. I'm John Russell.
Here's what's trending today. Google Doodle, the image on the opening page for Google searches, shows a man using a wheelchair and breathing machine at the front of a classroom. The man is Edward Verne Roberts, an early activist for disability rights in the United States. When he was 14 years old, Roberts became ill with polio and was paralyzed from the neck down. He had to sleep in an iron lung at night and rested in it during the day. Roberts went to high school by telephone until his fourth year, when his mother asked the school to let him come in person. Other students stared at him, but he decided it was because he was like a star, different from the other students. Roberts was the first severely disabled student to attend the University of California at Berkeley. That was not easy either. School administrators thought Roberts would never be able to get a job, so he had no reason to attend the university. He also had to fight for a living space where he could use his iron lung. Eventually, part of the university's hospital was opened to him. Soon, other disabled students were able to move into the space and attend classes. Roberts earned a bachelor's degree from Berkeley in 1964 and a master's degree in political science in 1966. Roberts and the other disabled students at Berkeley formed a support group. They called it the Rolling Quads. Quads is a shortened word for quadriplegic, a person who has paralysis in both arms and both legs. The people around them were surprised that the Rolling Quads had a positive view of being disabled. The group's positive message and successes led to more activism for the disability rights movement in the wider community. In 1976, California Governor Jerry Brown appointed Roberts as director of the California Department of Vocational Rehabilitation. He worked there until 1983. Roberts died of a heart attack in 1995 at age 56. His wheelchair is in the Smithsonian Museum. I'm Jill Robbins.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health and Lifestyle Report. When John Forbes lost his ability to walk, he had to make serious changes, but went on with his life. Forbes suffered a spinal cord injury 14 years ago. It forced him to use a wheelchair to move around. But Forbes says it was not his paralysis, but something else that nearly broke his will to live. It was electric shocks of pain in areas of his body that were paralyzed.
It was horrible. Excruciating. And it never stopped. You wake up, it's there. All day, it's there. You go to bed, it's there.
His spinal cord injury is midway down his chest, so Forbes can use his arms and hands. Yet he is unable to move his hips or legs. Forbes does feel sharp pain, like electric shocks, below his spinal injury. He needed to stop the pain, but nothing seemed to work. The World Health Organization reports that about 25 million people worldwide live with a spinal cord injury. The injuries are well known for causing paralysis. Another common side effect is neuropathic pain, a sensation Forbes describes. Neuropathic pain creates feelings of electric shocks in parts of the body that no longer experience normal sensations. In about 10% of cases, this feeling can be so severe and relentless, victims consider suicide. John Forbes did.
I had tried pretty much every kind of drug, tried exercise, tried you name it, anything and everything to try and get this pain to stop, and it wouldn't. And I was working at an investment bank and decided that was it. Quit my job and decided this was going to be the end. I just couldn't take it.
But then he learned about a doctor in Colorado who uses spinal operations to stop suicidal pain. Scott Falchi is the chief neurosurgical advisor at Craig Hospital in the city of Denver. Craig Hospital specializes in helping spinal cord injury patients. Falchi has helped hundreds of paralyzed patients who suffer from severe neuropathic pain. For those with a spinal cord injury, traditional treatments for reducing pain often fail. This failure leads some doctors to suggest the pain is in their head.
Patients, when they ultimately come to me, I'm kind of a last resort. Unfortunately, many of our patients are told that this could be a psychiatric problem.
But Falchi says it is mainly a spinal cord problem, and he fixes it with surgery. Falchi and his surgical team work for hours just to expose the spinal cord. Then he seeks out shiny white root entry zones. These zones, about the size of a button or coin, are filled with thousands of cells. This is where nerves bring sensations from the body and root in the spinal cord.
These nerve cells that come from different parts of the body don't travel all the way up to the brain. They connect first with other nerve cells in the spinal cord and let them communicate signals to the brain.
Using a pin-sized instrument, Falchi inspects the electric signals produced by these nerve cells. Mostly, he finds a calm electric signal. But when he finds a hyperactive nerve cell, he knows he has found the problem area.
Hyperactive nerve cells, yeah, we call them hotspots, firing with high energy when they shouldn't be firing.
Falchi says hotspots can cause suicidal pain. There can be hundreds of them. He finds the hotspots below the injury and kills them with heat. He says nerve signals coming in from the body can go around a spinal cord injury. He likens this to cars turning off a main road to avoid an accident. The drivers travel on local streets to go around the accident before returning to the highway. When hyperactive nerve signals create a detour in the body, Falchi says, they carry false pain signals. So by killing hot spots below the injury, he removes more pain. Falchi says this can be life-changing. It was for John Forbes, who had this surgery 2 years ago. Just 2 months after the operation, Forbes began a new job as the deputy treasurer for Colorado.
I'm a pretty happy person these days. I'm not 100% without pain, but I can live, and I want to live. Thank God for saving my life, Dr. Falchi, you know.
Falchi plans to publish new research that maps this detouring nervous system. I'm Ana Mateo.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.